For our Christmas reading, we're in Deuteronomy chapter 13.
If a prophet or a dreamer of dreams arises among you and gives you a sign or a wonder, and the sign or wonder that he tells you comes to pass, and if he says, "Let us go after other gods, which you have not known, and let us serve them," you shall not listen to the words of the prophet or the dreamer of the dreams. For the Lord your God is testing you to know whether you love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul. You shall walk after the Lord your God and fear him and keep his commandments and obey his voice, and you shall serve him and hold fast to him. For that prophet or that dreamer of dreams shall be put to death, because he has taught rebellion against the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt and redeemed you out of the house of slavery, to make you leave the way in which the Lord your God commanded you to walk. So you shall purge the evil from your midst. If your brother, the son of your mother, or the son of your daughter or wife, you embrace, or your friend, who is your own soul, entices you secretly, saying, "Let us go and serve other gods, which neither you nor your fathers have known, some of the gods of the people who are around you, whether near you or far from you, from the one end of the earth to the other, you shall not yield to him or listen to him, nor shall your eye pity him, and nor shall you spare him, and nor shall you conceal him. For you shall kill him. Your hand will be the first against him to put him to death, and afterwards the hand of all the people. You shall stone him to death with stones, because he has sought to draw you away from the Lord who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. And all Israel shall hear and fear, and never again do any such wickedness as this among you. If you hear in one of your cities, which the Lord your God is giving you to dwell in, that certain worthless fellows have gone out among you and have drawn away the inhabitants of the city, saying, "Let us go and serve other gods, which you have not known," then you shall inquire and make search and ask diligently. And behold, if it be true and certain that such an abomination has been done among you, you shall surely put the inhabitants of the city to the sword, devoting it to destruction, all who are in it and its cattle, with the edge of your sword. You shall gather all its spoil into the midst of the open square, and burn the city and all its spoil with fire, as a whole burnt offering to the Lord your God. It shall be a heap forever. It shall not be built again. None of the devoted things shall stick to your hands, that the Lord may turn from the fierceness of his anger and show you mercy and have compassion on you and multiply you as he swore to your fathers. If you obey the voice of the Lord your God, keeping all his commandments that I am commanding you today, and doing what is right in the sight of the Lord your God.
The passage, Deuteronomy 13, is pretty self-explanatory. If you just went back, read it once or twice, you can get the gist of it. You get the message. If somebody comes to you trying to persuade you to follow other gods, don't do it. Just don't do it. Don't allow it to happen in your communities. Don't allow it to happen in your families. Just don't do it. You've got to. That sort of stuff you've just got to get rid of. And why? Moses answers the question for us. In verse 4, he said, "It is the Lord your God you must follow. Him you must revere, keep his commands, obey him, serve him, hold fast to him. No other gods." This is Moses expanding on those first commandments, what it means to love the Lord your God with all your heart and your soul and your strength. So this is what Moses is telling us. So he's telling us why there in verse 4, and now it starts to get a little bit edgy. You can see this, you can work it out for yourself. Because Moses says, unequivocally, three times he says it, this sort of behaviour must be dealt with, and it must be dealt with harshly. In verse 5, that dreamer, that prophet, must be put to death. Purge the evil from among you. And Moses, what he does then in our passage, he gives us three examples of where these false prophets might appear. So he said, you know, verses 1 to 5, they could be like itinerant prophets that come in and read these false stories, you don't really know them, but they'll come in and they'll spread false messages. They might come in and perform some miraculous signs, he says, but if they tell you to go and follow other gods, it doesn't matter what the signs are, don't listen. Kill it. Get rid of that evil from among you. The other place we can see it appearing is in amongst your closest family members, your blood brothers, not even your half brothers, it says in the NIV, but your blood brothers, those born to your mother, your wives who you love, your closest friend who's there by your heart, your sons or your daughters. If any of them come up with this message, follow another God, kill them. Drive out this evil from among you. Verses 13 to 18. The other places that this might happen, it might be the end with whole communities. Wake up, comes to my mind, I remember that sort of thing. Whole communities might be caught up in this false prophecy, this false teaching. And Moses, in all these circumstances, is absolutely unequivocal. He doesn't allow any grey areas, any shying away from what needs to be done. Kill them. Stone them. Cut them down with a sword. Utterly destroy them. That's what our passage says. And our natural reaction, I wouldn't say I can see any faces because you're doing well at masking this. My natural reaction is, that's a bit harsh. We don't do that anymore. Especially when it comes to close family. Moses makes it clear, even our nearest and dearest should not escape. Your very own brother, your own son or daughter, the wife you love, your closest friend. Show them no pity, verse 8. Show them no pity. Don't spare them. Don't shield them. You must certainly put them to death. Your hand must be the first one to do it. Sounds harsh. Could you do it? Thank you for your honesty. The Israelites thought exactly the same. They thought it's far too harsh. Because nowhere in the Old Testament, nowhere, there's a few grey areas you think possibly might have happened, nowhere in the Old Testament do they actually put this passage into practice. You don't read of anybody, despite all of their idolatry that took place throughout that land, and there was a lot of it, despite all of that, never do you read them actually taking that person or the son or the daughter out and stoning them or slaying. Never did they take a whole town that's gone astray, and there's plenty of those, and wipe them out and burn it down to rubble. Never did they do it. The Israelites thought this is hard. And in fact, those of you who know your Bibles, you see that the opposite seems to be true. When we get to Judges 6, which is not that long afterwards, decades afterwards, we get to Judges 6, and Gideon, whom God called a mighty warrior, this is in verse 12, chapter 6 of Judges, is a mighty warrior, empowered by God, and shouldn't be afraid of anybody. What happened to him? His father had built an altar to Baal, and right next to it had erected a pole for a shearer. But what Gideon did was, he didn't take him to the leader of the town and stone him, or stone him himself. What he did was he snuck out in the middle of the night, because he was frightened, and broke down the altar, and broke down the Asherah pole. So he did it sneakily, it wasn't out in the open. And what happened was, verse 13 of Judges chapter 6, you find what the men of the town did when they heard about this Baal worship and what Gideon had done. They said, bring out Gideon. He must die, because he's broken down the altar. And he's cut down the Asherah pole beside it. The exact opposite of what Deuteronomy 13 is teaching us. In fact, there's only one person in Scripture recorded as having the instructions of this passage carried out in them. That person is Jesus. John 16, verse 33. This is the leader of Israel speaking to Jesus. We're not stoning you, we're not killing you for any of these signs that you've done, but for blasphemy, because you, a mere man, claim to be God. Matthew 26. And then the high priest tore his clothes and he said, Jesus has spoken blasphemy. Look now, you've heard the blasphemy. What do you think? It's worthy of death, they all replied. Prophesy to us then, you prophet. Christ, prophesy to us. Who hit you? As they struck him. Jesus is the only one that this passage, the punishment was carried out on. And so what we might do, as reasonable people, living in the 21st century, yeah, we are, what we might conclude is because there was no precedent, Israel never did this until Jesus, And that, yeah, the only real time that this sentence was carried out proved actually to be a miscarriage of justice on Jesus. Now what we might do is we might look to this Deuteronomy 13 passage, we might dismiss it as being junk. Put it on there, scrappy, as just being too draconian, too much, too far to go. We reject such things. Except so that actually when we get to the New Testament, this passage, Deuteronomy 13, is actually carried through and repeated and reinforced in the New Testament. So it's still valid today. If you actually go to Galatians 1, what you can do is if you spend some time studying it, it becomes clear that what Paul wrote this, he had Deuteronomy 13 in his mind. What he says in verse 8 of Galatians 1, it says, but even if we, let's meet Paul and these other leaders, even if we, or if an angel from heaven should preach a gospel other than the one we preach, let them be eternally condemned. That's what he says. Now it's interesting, because that phrase, eternally condemned, that's actually the Greek translation of the punishment from Deuteronomy 13, which we read as destroyed completely, irrevocably destroyed, devoted to God. It's the same Greek phrase. So that's clearly what's in Paul's mind. So what Paul's saying there in that verse 8, that even if we, the nearest and dearest, the ones you love and you care for, your nearest and dearest brothers in Christ, if we preach another gospel, we will be eternally condemned. Even if an angel from heaven, even if people come along with some sign of divine authority, even if they come along and they're accompanied by miraculous signs, if they preach another gospel, they should be eternally condemned. And so we ask the question, then, why so harsh? Why is this, surely it's just like a lie, you know, or whatever it was, surely we can just dismiss that as not being, not being too much or too bad a thing. People do it all the time. They preach other stuff and they tell us stories that go against God. But what Moses does here in our passage in verse 5, he says, what's going wrong when people come up and they preach or they give a prophecy that says something apart from what's been revealed? What Moses says is they've got to be put to death because they've preached rebellion against the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt and redeemed you from the land of slavery. The rebellion, that's bad, but what's really going wrong here is that in preaching false prophecy, what you are doing is you are taking people away from their only means of salvation. God was the only one that could rescue them out of Egypt. He was the only one that could take them out of slavery. If you force people or get people to reject God, they've rejected their only means of salvation. And what we can see now is that when it's carried through to the New Testament, the same is true. Jesus says, John 14, verse 6, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except by me. No one comes to the Father except by me. There's no other way of salvation. So if somebody comes along and they preach another gospel that takes you away from the gospel of Jesus, there's no way for you to be saved. What effectively the false teacher and the prophet, false prophet has done is they've done a crime worse than murder. Because they're bringing about spiritual destruction. People will be condemned eternally because their only means of salvation has been taken away from them. Irrevocable destruction. It's no light crime, and so it's harsh. Because the punishment matches the crime. You've got to destroy them forever because what they're doing is they're destroying forever those people that will listen to these false prophets. That's what's going on in this passage. That's why it's been repeated in the New Testament. But, Christmas message. What's really quite surprising in this passage, when we go back to verse 1, what we find there and what we read there is that signs and miracles do not guarantee that a messenger is from God. Verses 1 to 3. If a prophet, or one who foretells dreams, appears among you and announces to you a miraculous sign or wonder, and if the sign or wonder of which is spoken takes place, and he says, let's follow other gods you've not known, and let us worship them, you must not listen to the words of that prophet or dreamer. The Lord your God is testing you to find out whether you love him with all your heart, with all your soul. Signs and miracles don't guarantee that a messenger is from God. Moses knew this. Moses went to Egypt, you remember? Stood before Pharaoh. Moses performed a miracle. Stick turned into a snake. His magicians could do exactly the same thing. And if you think about a modern day example, Judas. Judas, according to Matthew 10, cast out demons. Judas, according to Luke 9, healed the sick. And yet Judas was prophesied, in King James Version, as being the son of perdition. From the moment he was born, he was doomed. He was never a true believer in Jesus Christ. He didn't walk away, he was just never with Christ. And yet, he performed all the signs and the wonders. But our passage says, they're not a guarantee. But Israel became absolutely dependent and reliant on signs and wonders. 1 Corinthians 1:22. When you know about Jews, you say, Jews always demand signs. They want signs as proof and evidence that the message you're given is from God. And Jesus himself says it. John 4:48. An Israelite official comes to Jesus. His son's really sick, looks as though he's sickened to death. And Jesus turns around to him and he says, unless you people see miraculous signs and wonders, you will never believe. The Jews wanted their signs and wonders, even though they were so shaky. They wanted them. But people believed in Jesus because of the signs. It's one of the strange things. John 7:31. Still many in the crowd put their faith in him. They said, when the Messiah comes, will he do more miraculous signs than this man? No one can do the things he does, except the Messiah. And even Jesus seems to advocate relying on the signs. John 10:38 says, even if you don't believe my words, believe the miracles, believe the signs, because at least then you'll know and understand that the Father is in me, and I'm in the Father. And of course, when John the Baptist was imprisoned, wondering what on earth's going on, when he's been a faithful minister for God and he's not sure whether Jesus really is the Messiah or not, Matthew 11, verses 4 and 5, Jesus has turned around to his followers and said, report back to John what you can hear and what you can see. The blind receive sight, the lame walk, those who have leprosy are cured, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and good news is preached to the poor. These are all signs that show you that I am the Messiah. So they wanted signs. They needed signs, even though signs were shaky. What we find in the New Testament is that the Jewish leaders, in killing Jesus, thought they were following the instructions of Deuteronomy 13. What they decided to do, against their nature and all their practice and their culture, they decided they're going to ignore the miraculous signs that proved he was a true prophet. In Jesus' case, they'd ignore that. And what they would do is they'd follow the rest of Deuteronomy 13. Because Jesus proclaimed that he was God, then it was encouraging people to worship and to follow him. They decided that they should kill him. That's what Deuteronomy 13 said. What they ignored was where it says in verse 14 of Deuteronomy 13. It said, if you hear rumors that people are talking about there being other gods, then you shall inquire and make search and ask diligently, and behold, if it be true and certain that such an abomination has been done among you, then you should kill them. If you're absolutely sure and certain that he's bringing falseness or a false truth. And so you have to make a judgment. Depending on what Jesus has done, is he really who he says he is? Is he really the Son of God? Or is he a false prophet and a dreamer that should have been killed under the rules of Deuteronomy 13? And now put ourselves in the shoes of the Israelites. What you have to do is you have to sit back and you have to think, okay, hundreds of years, even thousands of years before Jesus was born, there were certain prophecies that were given. The first one is that he would be born as a human being. That was prophesied in Isaiah 7:14. The virgin will be with child and will give birth to a son. He would be God. They would call him Emmanuel, which means God with us. And if you want absolute confirmation that that is true, that what God was saying, that this child that would be born was going to be human and God, well, you can turn to Isaiah 9 and verse 6. For unto us a child is born, a son is given. He will be called Mighty God, Everlasting Father. In fact, Jesus, as I saw earlier, there are 351 prophecies about him. 351, giving detailed accounts of Jesus' life and his ministry. So there would be no doubt about whether he was the one that was to come. Now, to be sure that Jesus is the Christ and Jesus is the one, every single one of those 351 prophecies must be true or must come true. If any one of them doesn't match, that's not it. It's just not true. So if any one of them's broken, so we look at these prophecies and we try and think about how they might be fulfilled. We're told that even before he was born, there would be a prophet, the greatest prophet ever, John the Baptist, greater than any that have gone before, greater than any that have come since, and he would be the one to prepare the way. It's prophesied in Malachi 3 in verse 1 and Isaiah 40 in verse 3. It's true. He would be born of a woman, as a baby. He wouldn't just appear as some supernatural being, he'd be born as a human. Genesis 1. It would be Eve's offspring, eventually coming down through to Mary. Mary would be a virgin. It's prophesied in Isaiah 7:14. Jesus would be from a line of priests through Mary's line. He'd be from a line of kings through Joseph's line, his adopted father, the line of the tribe of Judah. That's prophesied in Isaiah 9, verse 7, and Zechariah 6 and verse 13. In fact, we're told in Zechariah 6, 13, that Jesus would be the one to build the temple, that was prophesied, and he would be clothed with majesty, and he will sit and rule on his throne, the kingly throne, and he will be a priest on that throne, and there will be harmony between the priesthood and the kinghood in Jesus Christ. At this point, if you count him, we're up to 6 prophecies. I'm not doing 351. Don't panic. We're up to 6. What are the chances of all of those prophecies being true for one person? We worked out if it's a straight shake of the dice, that'd be 46,652. 1 in 46,252. But we've still got 346 to go. What are the chances that one person, as prophesied in Isaiah 53, that this person would be born poor and humble in a stable? What are the chances that that person also, as prophesied in Micah 5, would be born in Bethlehem? What are the chances that that same person would, as prophesied in Numbers 24 and in Isaiah 60, be heralded by this mysterious astronomical event, a bright star appearing in the sky when he was born? All these things happening at the same time. What are the chances that this same person, as prophesied in Isaiah 60 and in Psalm 72, would have kings coming to visit him and giving him gifts? What are the chances that that same person would also, as prophesied in Ezekiel 34, be a shepherd of special interest to the shepherds who are watching over their flocks by night? What would there be the chances of that same person, as prophesied in Jeremiah 31, verse 15, that he would have to escape as a refugee because of a massacre of infants in his birth town? What are the chances that that same person would flee to Egypt, of all places, as prophesied in Hosea 11, verse 1? What are the chances that that same person also would be so wise as a child that the leaders in Jerusalem would be astounded at his knowledge? That that same person, who as a young man was filled with the wisdom of God, as it says in Isaiah 11, would astound the people of Nazareth, his hometown, which was also prophesied, his hometown. What was the chances that he would also astound them with this wisdom from God? What are the chances that this same person who met all of these prophecies, fulfilled these prophecies, could then go out and give sight to people who have been blind from birth, which have been prophesied? What are the chances that he could make the lame walk? What are the chances that he could also make the deaf hear? What are the chances that he could raise the dead to life, as have been prophesied? What are the chances that this one person could be condemned by those who came to save, which is prophesied? What would be the chances that he would be offered at Passover time, like a sheep to the slaughter, as was prophesied? What are the chances they would be beaten and cut to shreds, but none of his bones would be broken, as was prophesied? What are the chances that the way he would die was he would be lifted up on a cross like the bronze snake in the wilderness in the old Exodus stories, as was prophesied? What are the chances, as we saw in Deuteronomy 12, that his blood would be poured onto out of the ground like water? What are the chances, as was prophesied in Psalm 22, that he would be forsaken by God when he died? What are the chances that he would be buried in a rich man's tomb, as was prophesied? What are the chances that he would be raised to life again by God, who would not let his Holy One see decay, wouldn't let him rot in the grave? What are the chances of that? What are the chances that this man would be sat down at the right hand of God and establish a kingdom for God's children, a kingdom where every single person that came to him would be a priest and an intercessor between mankind and God? What are the chances that this person could fulfill all of these prophecies? This is just a handful. 351, every single one of them is true. What are the chances of all of these coming through? Think of that sand on the seashore, the sand in the universe. One grain in all of that mass is still too big to represent the improbability of what would happen. It's impossible. But we know that God had a hand in it. That's the only explanation for it. Jesus is the one. Amen. Mm-hmm.